Welcome to the Quilt Fiction Podcast. I'm your host, Frances O'Rourke Dow. This is a re-recording of our 2021 Christmas story, Railroad Crossing, which we released last December. Due to some technical difficulties, the sound quality of the original version wasn't great, so we decided to try it one more time. Enjoy the story. Railroad Crossing, A Christmas Story. Bess, 1923. A long line of shoppers stretched along the sidewalk in front of Goody's department store Thursday morning, eager chatter filling the brittle air, everyone anticipating the wonders that awaited them inside. Bess Wilcox glanced at her watch, noting it was 6 minutes before the store's 9 o'clock opening. She hoped she could quickly maneuver her way around the Christmas sale crowds and have an hour or two at home to work on the quilt she was making Bill before it was time to pick up Helen from morning school. Her list was short: a tie for Bill and a hat and glove set for Annie. All of Jane's gifts would come from the bookshop, Helen's from the toy store. Bess and Bill had agreed that 2 gifts apiece for each girl would be enough, plus a stocking stuffed with fruit, nuts, and candy. Of course, knowing Bill, he wouldn't be able to keep from picking up a few extras. "It's Christmas, Bess," he'd insist if she complained about the cost. "Is it so bad to spoil the girls once a year?" He spoiled them on their birthdays and on family trips to the lake, really, whenever he had a chance. Of course, this put Bess in the position of mostly saying no to their little request for treats, because she didn't want her girls to be overly indulged, and sometimes she felt it unfair that she always had to be the strict parent. But mostly she was glad that the girls had such a doting father. Bess's own father had been a kind but somewhat distracted figure, most of his time spent in his study preparing his Sunday sermons or reading dry, dusty tomes on the history of the early church. He always had an affectionate word for Bess and a pat on the head, but it would never occur to him to take her out for a milkshake because the weather was fine, or come home from work with a little trinket especially for her in his pocket. The jingle of bells signaled that Goody's was open for business, and the line surged forward as the first shoppers hurried inside. Bess resisted the urge to rush. Even if she were in a bit of a hurry, she'd rather avoid the crush of the crowd. She let other shoppers push past her while she admired the window display, a quaint alpine village with a cheerful train running on a rather elaborate track that wound around the houses and hills. Funny, the quilt she was making Bill was composed of railroad crossing blocks, a simple but pleasing design that featured crossing diagonal lines of flying geese units. Bill had enjoyed building model train sets as a boy and had dreams of putting one together in the basement one day. Jane would probably love helping him, though Bess worried about encouraging her middle daughter's more boyish ways. A tap on her shoulder pulled Bess from her thoughts. Mary Pressler, Milton Falls' most active churchwoman and the prime mover behind nearly everything that happened at St. Luke's Episcopal, was suddenly at Bess's side. "Oh, we're both here for the sale, I suppose," Mary said as she rustled through her handbag. "I have my list in here somewhere. Well, I have half a dozen lists in here. So much to do this time of year. I don't recall Christmas being this busy when we were young, do you? And so early, too. Every year the sales start earlier, the activities start earlier. I can hardly keep up." "When I was a girl, it was always a rather hectic time, too," Bess replied. "My father was a vicar, you know, and Advent is such a busy season in the church, nearly as busy as Easter." Bess regretted the words as soon as they came out of her mouth. Mary was always looking for volunteers for one thing or another: a church coffee she dearly hoped she would bake a cake for, a clothing drive for the poor. Thanks to her father's position, Bess had spent her youth in enforced voluntary service, and while she didn't mind providing a platter of sandwiches for a tea on occasion or working in the nursery when there was a need, she by and large felt like she'd fulfilled her charitable duties to the church, St. Luke's or any other. "Why, I do in fact know how busy the church is this time of year, Bess," Mary agreed. "Really, I'm so very glad you mentioned it, because who better than you would understand how much work it takes to carry a congregation through the Advent season? There are all those special programs, and my goodness, all of those candles. And, of course," here Mary lowered her voice as though relaying an especially disturbing piece of news, "there's the annual Christmas pageant. Have you heard? This year, Father Benson wants Mary to ride into the nave on a real donkey." "Oh, that can't be true," Bess exclaimed with a laugh. "Can you imagine? What if the donkey had to do its business walking down the aisle?" "And we just had the floors cleaned and waxed." Mary shook her head. "It's an utterly ridiculous idea, but apparently one of Father Benson's grandchildren came up with it, and you know how he is about his grandchildren. They hung the moon as far as he's concerned, their every wish his command." "Well, good luck thwarting that particular plan," Bess said. "I suppose you could claim there's been a shortage of local donkeys. In fact, I can't say I've ever seen one in Milton Falls, although it wasn't too long ago that our milkman drove a horse-drawn wagon." Mary seemed to consider this. "A donkey shortage. That could be just the thing. Of course, then there's the matter of finding someone to direct the program. Victoria was supposed to do it, but the poor dear has sprained her ankle." "Goodness, that's a shame," Bess declared. She pointed to the store entrance. "Oh, look, Mary, the line has thinned out. Let's go in, shall we?" "Are your girls going to be in the pageant this year, Bess?" Mary asked, not budging. "They usually are, aren't they?" Bess smiled nervously. "Why, yes, you know Helen, such the little performer. I always make the girls' costumes, of course." She paused and then reluctantly added, "I'm happy to make other costumes if you need." "What I need is a director." Mary smiled as though she'd had a sudden thought. "You know, you would make an awfully good director, Bess." "Oh, I don't think so, Mary," Bess insisted. "I'm not very good at ordering other people's children around." Mary shrugged. "Well, I thought it wouldn't hurt to ask, but that reminds me, you know what else I've been thinking?" Bess sighed. "Really, this woman would give Napoleon a run for his money." "What were you thinking, Mary?" "That all three of your girls have been in Sunday school since the time they were just little things, and yet, to the best of my recollection, you've never actually taught Sunday school the way most mothers do at one time or another. As it just so happens, we need a teacher for the boys' class in the spring. Oh, they're a lively crew, but ever so much fun." Mary looked at her in such a way that Bess knew she was being given a choice. She could spend 3 weeks directing the Christmas pageant or 3 months trying to teach Bible stories to a group of unruly boys. "Well, when you put it that way, perhaps I should take on the Christmas pageant," Bess said. "It does seem like the more pressing matter." Mary slipped her arm into Bess's and the two women made their way to the store's front door. "Yes, I suppose it is. And I do think you'll enjoy it, Bess. Why don't I drop by your place later this afternoon with the scripts and various props left over from last year? Would that be convenient for you?" "Oh, so very convenient," Bess replied, a smile pasted on her face. "Why, it's the most convenient thing in the world." "I can't decide. Should I be Mary or the main angel?" Annie asked at dinner that night. Which do you think, Mother? I would like to be the baby Jesus, Helen announced as she bit into a roll. He's littler than me, but I could scrunch up into a tiny ball and be the same size as him. Jane held up her fork like a crook. It's the shepherd's life for me. Darling, please don't play with your utensils, Bess gently reprimanded her middle daughter. And Helen, what have I told you about speaking with your mouth full?
That I'm not to do it,
Helen said, thoughtfully chewing her roll. That's right, dear. Bess turned to her eldest, Annie. I think you'll be wonderful in any role, but I mustn't play favorites. You understand that, don't you? But I was Mary last year, Annie pointed out, so I already know my lines. Yes, which is an advantage, but all the same, perhaps it's time to let someone else play Mary. Bess peered across the table at Bill and gave him a look that she hoped would communicate he was welcome to join the conversation at any point. Bill winked at her before turning to Annie. Have you considered that what your mother needs most is an able assistant director? After all, while the assistant director doesn't get to bask in the limelight like Mary or the head angel, he, or she, is perhaps the most important person in any theatrical production. Annie looked skeptical. More important than the director? Oh, yes, the assistant director, or the AD, as I understand he's called in professional theater circles, is the one who juggles all the balls, keeps the train on the track, all of that. So, yes, I think it's fair to say that the AD is the most important role. More important than the baby Jesus? Helen asked in a shocked voice. Bill's eyes went comically wide. Oh, that would be taking the matter a bit too far now, wouldn't it? Bess smiled at her husband. She wished he would take the role of assistant director, or even better, director. He'd do a marvelous job putting all the young actors through their paces. But Bill had never been one for church or church activities. He showed up at Christmas and Easter and on an occasional ordinary Sunday if one of the girls asked him to come, but mostly he left the family's religious life to Bess. He told her from the beginning that's how it would be. I'm a believer, if you're concerned about that, he'd said to her a few months before their wedding as they discussed how they envisioned married life. I can say the creeds without hypocrisy. Only, you see, there were a few Jewish families down the road from us when I was growing up, and I always admired how my neighbors seemed to live out their faith instead of simply reciting their beliefs. Whereas when I went to church with my family, I saw all sorts of people claiming to be Christians whose lives didn't resemble Christ in the least. To be honest, I'm not sure what going to church has to do with being a believer. Bess had seen the same thing over the years, and it had bothered her as well. Still, she'd been raised in the church, and she wanted her children to be raised in the church. On that, she and Bill were in agreement, so she made no demands that he go to Sunday services except for important holidays. After all, Bill Wilcox could not be the only father who chose to spend Sunday mornings with a newspaper. "Do I get a costume if I'm the assistant, the AD?" Annie asked as she began, with Jane's help, to clear the dinner plates. "Because I do so like a costume."
"Of course,"
Bill exclaimed. "In fact, how about you and I go to Goody's this Saturday to find the perfect outfit for an AD? I see something dark, something very dramatic." "I can make Annie an outfit," Bess protested. "No need to spend money on one." "Perhaps you could make her a cape," Bill offered. "But no, I think Annie will certainly need a new skirt and a blouse for the job."
"Probably some new shoes," Annie added.
"That wouldn't surprise me a bit," Bill agreed.
Bess stopped herself from giving her husband a stern look.
She supposed it was worth the price of a skirt and blouse, which, honestly, Annie needed, given how much she'd grown over the last few months, to make Bess's job a little easier. Annie was good with children, after all, and she could keep an eye on Helen while Bess was busy with the other actors.
"I think I need a new outfit, too," Helen said as she picked up her water glass to carry it into the kitchen. "And glass slippers."
"I'll make you a costume," Bess promised her. "It will be nicer than anything you can buy at the store."
"Could I get a book from Anderson's bookshop?" Jane asked, walking back in from the kitchen. "I'll need something to read during rehearsals."
Bess couldn't help herself. "See what you've started?" she complained to Bill. Turning to Jane, she said, "I'll take you to the library tomorrow. I'll even check out books for you from the grown-up section."
Jane clapped her hands. "Goody, there's an astronomy book I've been eyeballing, but Mrs. Meineke won't let me put it on my card."
"Don't say eyeballing," Annie corrected her from the doorway. "It's vulgar."
"Eyeballing, eyeballing," Jane chanted with wicked glee. "Eyeball, eyeball," Helen joined in.
Bill grinned at Bess. "How about coffee in the living room while the girls continue this Aristotelian debate? I'll put a pot on." Bess nodded and then made her escape, wondering how she'd survive the next 3 weeks.
The Christmas pageant would be held at the beginning of services on Sunday, the 23rd. Mary suggested they do a Christmas Eve afternoon performance as well, but to Bess's relief, Father Benson had rejected the idea. His grandchildren liked to help him put up his Christmas tree on Christmas Eve afternoon, as it turned out, and then he had Christmas Eve services to prepare for and Christmas Eve dinner to eat. The Wilcoxes also put up their tree on Christmas Eve, but over the years, Bess had allowed the girls to start decorating the house beginning the second week of December. Annie loved to construct paper chains to dangle across the living room, and Jane spent hours outdoors searching for pine cones and holiday greens for mantels and windowsills. Helen made Christmas cards that she set out for display on any flat surface available, including the edge of the girls' bathtub. This year, Annie and Helen had begun collecting matchboxes that they then wrapped to put under a Christmas tree Jane had constructed out of pine branches, a project that for a run of several days was all-consuming. Involved in their own holiday preparations, the girls mostly left Bess free to sew costumes and make props for the pageant, though occasionally Annie wanted to discuss her latest idea for the production. If Mary couldn't ride a real donkey into the nave, perhaps Joseph could pull her in on a toy horse. Might Mrs. Lowry's new baby play the baby Jesus? It would be so much nicer than the doll they usually lay in the straw-filled bassinet. Her best idea so far was to have some of the more unruly boys play shepherds off in the distance, which in this case meant at the back of the sanctuary, where their mothers could be nearby to keep them under control. "Appointing Annie as my assistant director was a stroke of genius," Bess told Bill one night as they sat listening to Christmas carols on the radio after the girls had gone to bed. Bess was finishing up the quilt she planned to give to Bill for Christmas, though she'd told him it was a charity quilt that she would be donating to the children's home when she finished. She thought herself clever, coming up with an idea that allowed for her to stitch Bill's present in plain view. She'd even asked him to help her pick out colors when she began, saying it was for a boy, one who might like to sit in a comfortable chair after dinner to read, as Bill so often did. "Annie has all the qualities of a fine leader," Bill declared. "She's smart, organized, and creative. I'd put her in charge of Oster and Bernard Builders any day. She's a far better man for the job than George Oster."
"Long day at the office, dear?" Bess asked with a gentle smile.
"Oh, it's just George is such a cheapskate," Bill said as he shook out the evening paper.
Those of us on the top rungs of the company, the architects and the engineers, get paid handsomely, but the secretaries and custodial staff barely make enough to live on. When I brought this up at the meeting today, George replied, "No one's stopping them from looking for work elsewhere."
"Does he pay them the going rate?" Bess asked, threading her needle.
"Yes, but there's no reason he can't pay a little more. We've had a banner year. In fact, every year for the past few years has been a banner year. So why not share some of that wealth with the people who need it most? At the very least, give them a little something extra in their December paychecks."
"It doesn't seem right that there aren't any regulations around what people get paid," Bess said. "It gives employers too much discretion."
Bill sighed. "I don't like it either, Bess, but I suppose there's not much I can do about it.
Except hire Annie and hope she works her way up to being the boss," Bess suggested. "She'd pay a fair wage."
"That she would," Bill replied, before turning to the sports page. "Yes, hiring Annie would do the trick."
"But not until the Christmas pageant is over," Bess added. "I'll need her until the minute the curtain falls."
"You have my word," Bill agreed. "Not a second before then." As always, the December days rushed by in a flurry of planning, baking, shopping, and, this year, Saturday afternoon pageant rehearsals. To her surprise, Bess rather enjoyed her role as director. It was an easy enough job, after all. She knew the script by heart, as did most of the children. A crew of older girls, Annie, Molly Snyder, and Eleanor Patterson, had most of the younger girls in their thrall, which meant, with one or two exceptions, Bess had a fairly compliant group of actors on her hands. One perk of the job she hadn't anticipated was walking into church on Sunday mornings to a volley of eager greetings from the children participating in the pageant, many of whom she hadn't known well before now. On the third Sunday of Advent, Tom Falco, who played Joseph with a look of wry amusement on his face, as if to ask, "Can you believe all the fuss being made over a tiny baby?" passed Bess on his way to the communion rail and paused to whisper, "All us boys were talking about it, and we've decided you're all right." Bess couldn't remember receiving a compliment that pleased her more. But in spite of the fact that this had been one of the more enjoyable Advent seasons in recent memory, Bess sometimes experienced a hum of dissatisfaction as she sat in St. Luke's Sunday mornings with her girls on either side of her. Naturally, Bess wasn't the only woman who shepherded her children into the building, sans husband. But lately, she found herself glancing at the fathers in the room and wondering if she should revisit the topic with Bill, even though she knew he wouldn't change his mind. Looking about the sanctuary, she reminded herself that envy was a deadly sin, but that didn't stop her from envying the women who had their husbands with them. There was one other thing, an odd thing, that interrupted Bess's pleasure in the season. Starting in mid-December, things in her kitchen had started to go missing. She'd walk into the pantry to retrieve a can of peas or a jar of pickles, only to find that no such items existed on her shelves. Had she been a less fastidious housekeeper, she might have chalked it up to forgetfulness or poor planning, but Bess was a list maker. She kept careful records of what supplies she had on hand and consulted those records when she made her weekly grocery list. Had the girls been taking things for their games? She could imagine Jane doing just that, wrapping up a bag of beans and putting it under the tree for Helen, or packing a jar of peach preserves in a box and handing it to Annie on Christmas morning, producing her actual gifts for her sisters after she'd had her bit of fun. She'd been about to approach Jane about the missing pantry items when a more serious theft pushed those smaller matters aside. One morning, the week before Christmas, she'd gone to wrap Bill's quilt, only to discover it missing. Bess had finished the quilt a few days earlier and stored it in the little room off the front hallway. It hadn't been hidden, exactly, but she'd put it on top of a shelf. If they'd come into the room to get a pencil out of Bess's small secretary, the girls wouldn't have noticed it, and even if they had, Bess couldn't imagine that anyone would take it. It was one thing to pluck a jar of pickles from the pantry shelf. Absconding with a quilt was an entirely different matter. After she'd conducted a thorough search of the house, she asked the girls if they'd taken the quilt. Each of them insisted that she hadn't. "Maybe Daddy brought it with him to the office," Annie had suggested. "He's always complaining about how cold Mr. Oster keeps that place. Maybe Daddy is wrapping himself in the quilt while he works." Bess very much doubted it. She could ask Bill, she supposed, but surely it would show up, and in the meantime, she didn't want to spoil his Christmas surprise. But what if the quilt didn't show up? Bess fretted as she hurried down Main Street on the Saturday before Christmas. She wouldn't have a gift for Bill, and while he'd tell her not to be silly, he was a grown man after all, and having Bess for a wife was gift enough, she'd still feel horrible about it. Her shopping list included electric lights to string on the Christmas tree. The lights had been Bill's idea. He'd read an article about them in a magazine, and someone at work had mentioned that Carlton Electronics on Taylor Street, just off East Main, carried them. Bill had always worried about lit candles on the tree, staying up for an hour after they'd all been snuffed out just to make sure they didn't flare up again, and he was eager to try the new electric lights. Bess thought he should be the one to buy them, since he knew exactly what he wanted, but Bill had been invited by his brother to go to the Milton Falls Fairgrounds for an automotive show. Jane had asked to go with him, and to Bess's annoyance, Bill had agreed. Sometimes he treated his middle daughter more like his only son, and while it had been mildly amusing once, Bess felt it was time to put an end to these sorts of outings. But Jane had begged, and Bill had insisted. On her way to Taylor Street, she passed Goody's department store, which looked every bit as busy as it had on the day of the big sale a few weeks before. A boy was standing in front of the window display, and when Bess got closer, she saw that it was Tom Falco, the Christmas pageant's Joseph. "Do you like model trains?" she asked, coming up beside him. "I suppose all boys do." Tom looked at her, a thoughtful expression on his face. "I suppose some boys do and some don't. I do, that's a fact. I've asked for 2 new boxcars and a bridge this year. Do any of your children like trains?"
"I think my daughter Jane would enjoy building a model train set," Bess said, "especially now that some of them are electric. Jane is interested in electronics, anything with a scientific angle, really."
"My brother Al is like that," Tom said. "Me, I just like looking at trains. Real trains, model trains." He pointed to the display. "This is nice and all, but it's got me thinking. Why would a train with all those cars go round and round a village with only a few houses? It doesn't make much sense, if you ask me."
Bess laughed. "I never thought about that. Of course, when I look at this display, mostly I think about who lives inside the houses and what they'll be eating for supper tonight."
"I never thought about that," Tom replied.
Bess smiled. "I suppose I should get on with my shopping. We've got dress rehearsal this afternoon, don't forget. And tomorrow's the big day."
"I haven't forgotten," Tom said. "My mother makes me say my lines every night. Not that I have that many. When you think about it, Joseph's not a very important part of the story."
"Oh, I think he's very important," Bess argued. "We just don't see the important things he does. After all, someone had to go talk to the innkeeper about a room and convince him to let the family stay in the stable. Someone had to make a bed in the manger for Mary and make a cradle for the baby Jesus."
Tom seemed to consider this. "I think you're right, Mrs. Wilcox," he said after a moment, standing up just a little taller. "Joseph is more of a behind-the-scenes man. He's the one who gets the job done while everyone else is yakking away."
"Exactly," Bess said, smiling.
Tom turned back to the train set on display. Too bad there weren't trains back in Bible times. Mary would have been a lot more comfortable riding in a train than on a donkey. Bess watched as Tom walked down the street toward home. She knew his mother from church, knew that Tom had two brothers, one older and one younger. Did Mrs. Falco wish she had at least one daughter in the mix? Bess had never wished she had a son, other than to give Bill a boy to take fishing or skating. But now, watching Tom as he stopped to examine something on the sidewalk, she could imagine that having a boy around the house would be nice, at least if he were anything like this boy, friendly and curious, a thinker. Which was to say, a son who was a lot like her daughters, a son who was just like Bill. Thinking of Bill, Bess was reminded she still didn't have a present for him, nothing special anyway, and Christmas was just a few days away. Well, there must be something in goodies, she told herself as she made her way to the entrance. If not special, at least nice, a hat or a good pair of gloves. And when the quilt finally showed up, which it would, it had to, it would be a surprise. Oh, look what Santa dropped off, she'd tell Bill, handing him the package. He found this stuck under the seat in his sleigh. Bill likes surprises, after all. So she would surprise him with the quilt later. A hat would do for now. As the children took their bows at the end of the pageant, Mary Pressler came over to where Bess was standing to the side of the chancel, where the performance had taken place. "Job well done, Bess," Mary exclaimed. "The only mishap was when Jody Cavanaugh dropped his crook on Wallace Fellner's head, and even that was rather charming." Bess laughed as she recalled the look on Wallace's face and how he'd glanced at Annie as if to ask, was that supposed to happen? So, yes, it had been charming, and Helen had been charming as the tiniest angel, and Jane had been charming as a shepherd who had also been tasked with making sheep sounds from time to time. Bess was proud of all the children in the pageant, and she was especially proud of her girls.
You know, Bess, you've done such a marvelous job with the children, and I am still looking for a Sunday school teacher.
Bess gave Mary a look that was perhaps 1 or 2 degrees sharper than absolutely necessary. All the same, Mary took it well.
It's just that you're so good with children, Bess, she said. But I suppose you've done your bit by directing the pageant.
Which I very much enjoyed, Bess told her friend, so thank you for the opportunity and for all you do here at St. Luke's. Mary's face positively glowed, and Bess wondered how often people expressed their gratitude for all her service. Probably not enough of us, Bess thought, as she watched the young actors leave the stage to go find their families. She looked around the room for Bill, who she'd seen earlier in a middle pew, but now she couldn't find him. Well, maybe he'd gone outside to smoke his pipe before the service, she told herself as she went to collect her daughters. Surely he'd be back in a moment. But Bill didn't come back. Bess had saved a spot for him, happily anticipating her husband's presence by her side, and every time someone asked if they could sit there, Helen had announced, "My daddy's sitting there." "He'll be here any second," Bess told herself as Father Benson read the weekly announcements. "Any second," she repeated as Bruce Lampron read the service's opening prayer. By the time Father Benson and the deacons had marched down the aisle to read the gospel passage, Bess had accepted that Bill was, in fact, not coming back. Once again, she took inventory of other people's husbands who filled the pews. There was Martin Pressler next to Mary, Ed Snyder next to Elizabeth, Bruce Lampron next to Wilma. All those husbands who'd stayed on after the pageant and who now stood and turned toward the center aisle as Father Benson read the gospel. Who chorused, "Praise to you, Lord Christ," at the end of the reading and crossed themselves. who turned to their children and indicated they could sit down now that Father Benson was about to begin his sermon. But not Bill Wilcox. Bill Wilcox didn't do any of those things because Bill Wilcox wasn't there. By the time the service had ended, Bess had a pounding headache. She'd done her best to pray, to remember that she was to forgive those who sinned against her as she herself was forgiven. But she couldn't bring herself to do it. Just because she loved the man, just because she could make a long list of all the ways he was a wonderful husband and a wonderful father, didn't mean she could brush aside her disappointment as though it were a bit of thread on her sweater. Normally, Bess would have stayed on after the service for coffee hour, but right now she wasn't in the mood for cheerful chit-chat. The girls begged to stay. They could get a ride home with the Snyders, and Bess granted them permission, knowing that her mood wouldn't be improved by listening to her daughters complain all the way home about all the nice treats they'd missed. Besides, this would give her an opportunity to talk to Bill about how disappointed she'd been that he'd left early, how much it had upset her. She rolled down the car window a few inches as she drove home, the frigid air cooling her hot cheeks. She and Bill rarely argued. In fact, she'd sometimes wondered if they should argue more. She remembered Elizabeth Snyder telling her once, "Oh, Ed and I had it out last night, and I'm so glad we did. We completely cleared the air, and everything is 100% better." Bess and Bill never had it out. They tended to tamp things down instead. She'd always been rather proud that they'd never been one of those couples that bickered and picked at each other. But having it out, as Elizabeth had put it, was different than bickering. Yes, Bess told herself as she pulled the car into the drive. It was time to have it out with Bill. She would let him know in no uncertain terms that his leaving church before the service today had been simply unacceptable. Unacceptable. And a quiet voice in Bess's head added, "Embarrassing." Was that it? Bess thought as she collected her purse and pushed open the car door. Was she simply embarrassed that she sat unaccompanied in the pew while so many other women had their husbands beside them? Was she more concerned what people would think about Bill than anything else? No, she insisted to herself. A father should be in church with his family. After all, her father had always been in church on Sundays. To be fair, her father was clergy, and it was his job to be in church on Sunday. But still, "Don't go soft on me now, Bess Wilcox," she told herself as her feet hit the pavement. "Hold your ground." "Hello, Mrs. Wilcox?" A young woman was walking up the driveway toward Bess. "Are you Mrs. Wilcox?" she repeated. Flustered, Bess replied, "Why, yes, I'm Bess Wilcox. May I help you?" "I just wanted to thank you," the woman replied. She held out a small tin. "I'm Mary Ann Schultz. I work in the secretarial pool at Oster and Bernard. I wanted to drop off a little gift for you. It's just a pan of gingerbread, but Mr. Wilcox mentioned once that you like gingerbread. Forgive me for intruding on a Sunday, but this morning was the only time I could get Father to give me a ride over." She paused to point to a car parked by the side of the road. "That's him there. I told Mr. Wilcox I'd be by with a little gift for you this morning, and he said he'd be sure to be here to receive it. He's such a nice man, your husband, though not half as nice as you." "I'm not sure I understand," Bess told the woman. "Won't you come in and have a cup of coffee?" "Oh, thank you, but I can't. Father said I should only be a moment. He's been such a help since the accident, taking me places." "The accident?" Mary Ann Schultz gave Bess a quizzical look. "Why, yes.
You know about it, surely. My husband, my late husband, was killed in an automobile accident this past summer. It's been such a difficult time. We didn't have much money when Fred was alive, and now we have even less. The job at Ostrom Bernard has been a lifesaver. And all the things you sent us, the preserves and the flour and the beans. Well, I can't tell you how much I appreciate it. Anyway, I just had to do something to thank you. I know I'll never adequately be able to thank you for the quilt you made Joey. There's not enough gingerbread in the world for that. Bess stared at the woman. The quilt? For Joey? Oh, it's just the most beautiful thing. I burst out into tears when Mr. Wilcox gave it to me. I told him he was a lucky man to have a wife like you, and he said, I'm the luckiest man alive. A horn sounded. That's Father, Mrs. Schultz said, handing Bess the tin. I better run. Mother looked after Joey this morning while I baked, and I suspect she's ready for Father to come collect her. Merry Christmas, Mrs. Wilcox, and thank you again. With that, the young woman hurried down the drive toward her father's car. Bess felt a little dizzy. She stood on the front walk, trying to piece together what Mrs. Schultz had just told her. Bill had been taking food from the pantry and giving it to her because her husband had died and money was tight. Why on earth hadn't he told Bess what he'd been doing? Did he think she would have said no? Maybe, Bess admitted, given how much she always fretted about spending too much money. But surely Bill knew that she wouldn't have objected to helping out Marianne Schultz. Surely he knew that. The front door opened and Bill stepped onto the porch. I saw you out here talking to Mrs. Schultz, he said. I assume she told you everything. Yes, Bess said as she walked toward her husband. I'm just curious why you didn't tell me everything. They walked into the house and Bill gestured toward the kitchen. Let's have some coffee. When they were seated at the kitchen table, their cups in front of them, Bill began. I took a jar of peach preserves one morning on a whim, he admitted. Marianne Schultz has had such a rough time of it, and I've noticed how she scrimps on everything. The other girls go to lunch on Fridays, but Marianne eats alone at her desk, usually just a hard-boiled egg, something plain like that. For some reason, I thought a jar of your preserves would cheer her up. I told her you'd sent them, just so she wouldn't wonder why one of the bosses was being especially nice to her. Bess took a sip of coffee before replying. Did you plan on ever telling me about my generous act of charity? I honestly meant to, Bill said, but you know how it is at the end of the day. I forget half of the things I mean to tell you about. Every time I took something, I thought to myself, I need to mention this to Bess. I should do it right now. But I convinced myself it could wait. The thing is, if you don't mention it right away, something rather trivial starts to feel like an impeachable offense. Bess nodded. You must have known, though, at some point I'd notice, especially when you took the quilt. Of course, although I thought you might not notice that quilt was missing for a day or two. It was tucked away on a rather high shelf. I almost didn't see it myself. I knew you'd been planning on donating the quilt to the children's home, but I don't know, Bess. I'd caught Marianne crying at her desk the day before because she couldn't afford a Christmas present for Joey, and the quilt was so beautiful. So you gave it to her and said it was from me, Bess finished for him. But Bill, why didn't you just tell me? That's what I don't understand. Of course I would have preferred you'd ask me first, but I'm happy you gave the quilt to Mrs. Schultz. Although, Bess hesitated. Should she tell Bill she'd made the quilt for him? If she didn't tell him, would it be one more time she'd failed to confront him about something? Or would it be an act of charity?
It was Christmas after all, and she could make Bill another quilt. The fact was, Bess Wilcox was always happy to make another quilt. "Although what?" Bill asked. "Nothing," Bess said. "I just wish I'd known beforehand who I was making the quilt for, so I could have asked Mrs. Schultz what colors she preferred."
"I should have known that's how you'd feel about it," Bill said. "I just, well,
honestly, Bess, I've been working up my courage to make my big confession and take my lumps, but you've just seemed so upset with me lately. I was afraid there would be more lumps than I wanted to take at one sitting."
Bess was quiet for a moment. She didn't quite know how she felt. She wasn't angry that Bill had taken the food, or even that he'd taken the quilt, although that act tilted toward the egregious. Anyone, especially if she were a quilter, would agree. But the fact that he hadn't said anything about it didn't sit well with her. Although, if truth be told, Bill wasn't the only one keeping secrets. She looked across the kitchen table at her husband.
"If I'm upset with you, Bill, it's because you didn't stay for the service today, although at least now I know you had a reason to leave."
"But today wasn't the first time you've been upset," Bill said, leaning forward. "I've felt it for a while now. For the life of me, I don't know what I've done wrong, besides taking things without telling you why, and you didn't know until today that I was doing it."
"We're not very good at this, are we?" Bess asked with a sad smile. "Having it out, I mean. You haven't done anything wrong, other than not telling me that you'd given some things to Mrs. Schultz."
"But you've been upset with me, Bessie. I know you have."
"Not upset. Not really."
Bess paused. "Clear the air," she told herself. "Go ahead."
No, you're right. I have been upset with you. It's been bothering me that you don't come to church with me and the girls more often."
"That's it?" Bill leaned back in his chair and laughed. "That's all?"
"Saying it out loud, it doesn't seem like such a terrible thing, does it?"
Bess shook her head and smiled.
"I should have said something earlier. Only, honestly, I was sure you'd say no."
Bill's expression turned serious.
"If it's something you really want, Bess, I'd never say no."
It wouldn't have to be every Sunday," Bess said.
"Maybe once a month?"
"Any Sunday, Bess. Every Sunday, if it means that much to you."
A burst of cold air announced the girls' arrival through the kitchen's back door.
"I had cake and cookies and punch, and it was wonderful," Helen announced. "I think I'm going to lie down now. I was too busy talking to people about the wonderful job I did as assistant director to eat anything," Annie said, shrugging out of her coat. "I enjoyed all the compliments, but I missed out on all of the treats."
Bess pointed to the tin of gingerbread on the kitchen counter. "There's a lovely treat for you in there."
"It's gingerbread that one of my secretaries made us for Christmas," Bill added.
"Did you know that ginger originated in China?" Jane informed them. "All sorts of interesting things originated in China. Fireworks for one, paper for another."
"Mother, make Jane stop educating us," Annie complained. "We're on Christmas vacation."
"Could you all quiet down in there?"
Helen called from the living room couch.
"I'm trying to rest."
Bess and Bill looked at each other and laughed.
"I'm about to come in there and build a fire in the fireplace," Bill called back to his youngest daughter. "Shall I bring you some gingerbread on a plate, or have you had too many sweets already?"
"Of course not, silly," came Helen's reply. "Please bring me some."
"Bill, you're spoiling her. She's had enough," Bess complained. "She can have some gingerbread with dinner."
"Christmas only comes once a year, Bess," Bill said. He walked over to Bess and wrapped her in a warm hug. "Everyone deserves to be spoiled at Christmas."
"Even you," Bess almost said, but she didn't want any nosy questions about what she meant by that. She crossed the kitchen to cut the gingerbread, thinking about the box that she'd hidden beneath her sewing things, the one with the model train set inside of it. So much better than a hat, she thought. Although maybe not quite as wonderful as a quilt.